give for that wonderful phrase. To hear those three little
Patricia T. O'Connor is here. She visits us once a month to talk about more than just three little words. Sometimes we talk about 10 and 15 and 20 words. But she's written a whole bunch of books that have three-word titles, just coincidentally. It has nothing to do with anything Ella Fitzgerald ever sang about. Woe Is I, Words Fail Me, You Send Me. And then the most recent breaks the mold a little bit. It's Woe Is I, Junior, aimed at kids. And Pat, it's always a pleasure to see you.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
You're going to have a Thanksgiving dinner?
Yes.
And are you doing the cooking?
I'm doing some of the cooking.
Because so far, everybody I've asked has told me, well, we're going to somebody's house.
Well, we are going to somebody's house. I'm taking some of what I'm cooking.
I think I'm the only person who's having Thanksgiving dinner at home. But that's a whole other matter. I bought this this roaster. A special pan at Costco. Mm-hmm. And I got to use it, so I figured might as well have people come over.
Right.
Do you usually bring some stuff that you have put together over the past month and often based on things that our listeners have sent you? Uh-huh. What about this month?
Well, this month, here's another thing that I'd never heard of. I always learn things from your listeners. But a listener named Olga in Manhattan, who sends me a lot of good things, asked me if I was familiar with a new usage. Now, we all know the I Love New York slogan and logo, words by Bobby Zarum and a logo designed by Milton Glaser. It's been around for more than 40 years now, and we're all very overly familiar with it, I'd say. But people have actually started saying and writing the word heart instead of the heart symbol.
Like I heart Huckabee.
Yeah, and I heart my mom. I heart Labrador retrievers. That kind of thing, giving a literal meaning to the symbol, which I thought this was very bizarre.
Me too.
You know, it's
Gary Hart never even became president.
But when you think about it, it's the word love transformed into a symbol, transformed into another word. It's very bizarre. But interestingly, heart used to be a verb centuries ago, back in the 800s. Through about the early 1600s, it
meaning
was a
what?
Word. Meaning to inspire or give heart to someone.
Heart, like hearten.
I heart you, yeah. Only it wasn't hearten, it was heart. For instance, in Othello, Rodrigo says, my cause is hearted.
Hmm.
But that fell out of use in the 1600s, and
it's now disheartening.
It's back again. But I thought that was interesting. And something else that I learned recently, when a couple of listeners, one wrote in about the pronunciation of the word adult, which can be either adult or adult. But interestingly, the word adult comes from a Latin word which means to grow up, and that gives us the word adolescent. But did you know that it's not really connected with the words adultery or adulterate?
It isn't.
Those come from a different Latin verb meaning to pollute. So as the Oxford English Dictionary explained it, the English word derived from the Latin for pollute describes a pollution or violation of the marriage bed. But that's interesting. See, I always thought adult and adultery had to do with being grown up somehow, but not really.
That word was one of the great traumatic words of my high school years because I had a teacher who used to make fun of me for saying adult, and he insisted that I say adult, which I have ever since, but he made fun of me in class.
Oh,
and it's one of the reasons I will never make fun of anyone for mispronouncing a word, no matter how egregious.
No, actually, those are both standard pronunciations.
Well, I'll have to find him.
Both.
I don't know if he's still alive. And if he is, I'll say, nyan, 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 nyan. too late now.
See, he adulterated your young.
Among other things,
right?
That he
your
did
personality.
To me. I think he was just trying to keep me under control. I was a rather rambunctious
young man.
We have a listener who has called in to ask about the word matrimony.
Mm-hmm.
Why matrimony would be marriage when the word mat would suggest motherhood, wouldn't it?
That's a very good question. Let me see what the American Heritage Dictionary tells us.
Because it does come, I'm sure it has the root mater, which is mother, and matrimony would suggest that only one person is getting married, which reminds mm-hmm. me of my old colleague at when I was young, and I'd say, you're married? And he'd say, no, my wife is married.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's correct. Matrimony, it is linked to the Latin word for mother, mater. We get matron from that too. So I suppose it just means, you know, once you've undergone
matrimony.
We're
not going to explain this one well.
Okay.
It's sexist no matter how we come
yes,
up with this,
true.
Isn't it?
That's true. Let's forget the whole thing.
But we can't really blame the language for the fact that in the year 1621 or whatever, mm-hmm. maybe a lot earlier than that, mm-hmm. it was a sexist language. Mm-hmm.
But, you know, you can look matronly without actually having undergone matrimony or motherhood.
True,
so there
true.
You go.
Our number here is 212-433-9692. That's 212-433-WNYC. Anything else you want to talk about before we go to our first call?
Well, here's one. A listener named Daniel said, I work for a marketing firm where the rules of English are subject to marketizing. And I think he said that facetiously. But he said, lately our research department has informed us of learnings that I assume can be used to make decidings. This kind of talk gives me the cringings. Now, I'd never heard of learnings to mean findings from research.
Oh, yeah.
But apparently it's out there. You've heard of it?
Yeah, sure.
You have.
Mm-hmm.
Do you consort with people who use language like
well,
this?
Well, there are many words that we know that we don't necessarily use. This is something that I have to deal with when people are writing for me, and mm-hmm. I will say, have you ever said eschew in normal conversation? I know what that word means, but I'm not going to say it out loud because it would make me sound rather weird.
Well, actually, learnings has been around since about the 16th century. Francis Bacon used it a lot. He used learnings as a plural noun, but the OED has only one reference since the 17th century.
And that was me last
week. And
that
was you.
Well,
so
no, I have actually heard it. I don't know why, but I went to school in London for a little while, and when you ask someone what her major is, she'll say maths.
Oh yes.
Instead of math. And so perhaps learnings came along with the maths.
That may be.
Should we take some calls?
Yes, please.
John from New Jersey.
You know, I was going to ask about neck of the woods, where the origin of neck of the woods comes from. Do you know that?
I don't know, but I could speculate because neck is used in a lot of geographical references.
Like Great Neck.
Uh-huh. It just means a corner or a bend or something. So I guess that's where it comes from.
Because you say not in my neck of the woods.
Yeah, exactly.
As opposed to not in my woods.
Right.
So you're suggesting it's a certain area, a specific area
right,
in the woods.
Right, right. I'm not sure exactly where it comes from, but I can do a little poking around and maybe report next time or somebody out there
neck,
might know.
Why do you think neck even, is it because perhaps it's an area that connects one thing to another thing?
Well, that's an interesting theory. Let me just check on neck here.
Like Great Neck, always, whenever I've been there, I've always said, well, it's a good neck, but I don't know if it's a great neck.
Let's see. It comes from Middle English. So it's an Anglo-Saxon word. Henneka. it can be, let's see, a narrow or elongated portion of something. Geology, it's a solidified lava. let's see, a narrow margin. So it just...
I think that narrow margin is what we're really talking about there.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, thank you for calling us, John. Barbara from New York. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. I'm curious about this expression now that it's the holiday season and people are entertaining. It seems that I had college roommates, and they were from, like, Long Island, and they would say, I'm making a party. Or when I have my children, when we have a play group, friends from... I'm originally from upstate New York. They would say, make nice instead of be nice or play nice.
That I've heard.
We always would say, well, I'm having a party or I'm throwing a party. And when I first heard that expression, I was kind of like, what? You're making a party? It's,
yeah.
I was just curious if there's a proper way or if it's just a local.
I've never heard it myself. Have you, Leonard?
No.
No.
Really?
Never heard it.
I had a
sometimes
Queens in Brooklyn.
Well, sometimes this is a result of translating from another country. For example, I remember when I was growing up with some children of Italian immigrants, and they'd say, "My mother makes me go out and play." Now, the mother was letting them go out to play, but the translation got complicated. It's the same sort of thing. Happened with a lot of verbs, which, when translated literally, didn't sound very good in English.
Somehow, when I think of my mother making me do something, I think of being forced to do something.
Yes.
Yeah. But making a party, I haven't heard.
Yeah, because one roommate, her background, she was Italian-American. Another roommate, her background, she was Jewish. But the common bond was they were from, one friend was from Queens, one was from Brooklyn.
And Great Neck.
a couple people I knew were from Long Island who said this expression, and then... Mm-hmm.
But they had made it to college.
Right. And then when I was older, I lived in Manhattan, and I had a play group. And there were women in the group with their children, and when the children would play, they'd say, okay, make nice. And I'm like, make nice?
Well, I've heard make nice. That's
I'm just saying, it was a different expression that I would hear, okay, play or try to get along.
But I think make nice is kind of idiomatic, don't you?
Yeah, I think it's a kind of a joking usage.
We have to take a little break, and then we will be... making nice with more listeners. Our number here is 212-433-9692. My guest is Patricia T. O'Connor, author of now 4 books on our English language. 4 books. Wow, I'm so impressed.
What I'd give to hear those 3 little words.
Do you know about the guest picks section of our website where we ask some of our guests to tell us a few things about themselves that most people would not know? For example, John Turturro told us he really likes ballet. You can read more by going to our show page at WNYC.org and clicking on Guest Picks. This is WNYC and WNYC.org. We're also heard on satellite.
Three little words. Oh, what I'd give for that wonderful phrase. To hear those 3 little words. That's all I'd live for the rest of my days.
We're and back with Patricia T. O'Connor, author of Woe Is I, Words Fail Me. Co-author of You Send Me, and once again, sole author of Woe Is I, Jr., a grammatical book aimed at kids. Should I say grammatical or grammar book?
Grammar book.
Yeah, I was doing that thing that we tend to do, adding a couple of syllables that are unnecessary. A listener writes in, necks are sometimes peninsulas, such as Throg's neck, or this is LLODS neck. Is there a place called Lod's neck?
Could be.
Well, anyway, our number here, 212-433-9692. You had some other things that you received. We should talk a bit about your website, gramophobia.com. People can go there and click on Pat's blog to see a selection of language questions from WNYC listeners. And if you want to ask one, you can email her at mailbox@grammarphobia.com. Mm-hmm. And you said that some other interesting things came in this month?
Yeah, actually, a listener, David Hawkins in Brooklyn, who often sends me interesting things, sent the most wonderful mixed metaphor, quoting a spokesman for Governor Otto of Idaho. This is a wonderful one. Quote, "He's not a fair-weather friend. This whole kind of cowboy ethos is what he's about. He believes that when the chips are down and the going gets hard, you don't throw somebody to the wolves."
Ooh.
So that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. 5 metaphors in one. So that must set some kind of record.
Now, I'm sure that person did it with full consciousness and mm-hmm. thought, wow, mm-hmm. how clever I am.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Exactly. Now, another listener has something that...
Why does that bother me so much? Is that just overkill?
Maybe because he's a politician spokesman. That is somehow whatever they say is irritating.
No, I think that the whole idea of a metaphor is to create something special. And when you just yeah. line them up like that, all you're doing is canceling one after the other out.
Yeah, yeah. But they're very entertaining. Another listener has something that I've often wondered about, and I think you mentioned it once a few months ago yourself. He says, Spanish-speaking reporters sign off by saying their names as Spanish people would say them, even though they speak accent-free English throughout the report. And I've noticed this, too, that broadcast journalists usually pronounce the names of foreign countries and cities much the way any American would, except Spanish or Latin American or South American place names. They say those with a Spanish accent. Have
right.
you
we
noticed that?
Yes.
They don't say
Chile,
Heidelberg, or right. they don't say
Osterich.
Paris, but yet they say Guatemala or whatever. Now,
and
why is
you,
that? Is there a cachet about Spanish?
Or maybe it's because we are, when we talk bilingual, we're usually talking about Spanish and English.
Mm-hmm. Maybe that's it. Maybe people want to kind of show off their bilingualism in Spanish, whereas they don't in other languages? I don't know.
Or maybe it's just because Mandalit del Barco pronounces it Santiago, Chile. What do you think?
I don't know, but it's a very interesting question.
A listener asks, they sent this in by email, is it meat market or meat market? M-E-E-T-M-A-R-K-E-T or M-E-A-T-M-A-R-K-E-T?
Well,
both make sense to me.
Yeah.
She writes.
Although the meat market, M-E-E-T, that could be a euphemism for singles meeting. Oh, is that it?
Yeah.
Oh, I see.
Some people say this is a meat market.
I see, yeah.
But I think that it's usually meant actually as M-E-A-T, and it's slightly pejorative there.
Right.
What is the origin of the suffix ola, as in payola, granola, moviola, mazzola, rockola?
How interesting.
Most of these are trademarks, and they go back to early 20th century. I believe they might be trading in on the popularity of cola.
Maybe. I hadn't heard that. That's a very interesting question.
Although payola is something that could get me fired. Granola is something that can get me fired up.
I don't think that people on public radio make a lot of money from payola somehow. Do you?
Well, if somebody offers me something in uh-huh. exchange for a visit to the show, that's payola. And if I make that kind of arrangement, okay, you can come on here if you give me this or that, then I'm receiving payola and I could be fired.
Hmm.
But I'm not talking.
Okay. Well, I won't say anything.
No, I would never do that.
I know you wouldn't.
And what were you saying there?
No,
the
but
ola?
That ola, I don't see it. I'm looking up... suffixes, I don't see it.
What about
them.
Looking at payola or something? Because we know where gate comes from on Watergate, and then we have every other kind of gate possible after
mm-hmm,
that.
Mm-hmm.
Which, by the way, I find to be a rather annoying thing.
I do too. The gate thing?
Or any of those. But gate being one of them. I'm trying to think of another.
Yeah, here it says payola probably comes from pay, as in payoff, plus ola suffix, but it doesn't say what the ola suffix means.
Well, maybe we're back to Spanish. Okay. Ron from Connecticut. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, I have a question about the word real estate or real property.
Mm-hmm.
Studying about it, actually, in a philosophy class.
Oh.
And the question came up. My research indicates it could be either from the Latin res, meaning just thing or matter. It's a real kind of thing, not
uh-huh.
fake. Or else from the Spanish, royal, you know, regal, it belongs ultimately to the king.
Mm-hmm.
The royal estate, in effect.
Royal estate, exactly. Any idea?
Well, let's see. I see that one of the meanings of real in philosophy, well, you know what that is, existing objectively, but it also has to do with related to or having value reckoned by actual purchasing power, as in real growth. Let me see. I'm looking a little further here. No, I guess that's the closest I could think. Yeah, Latin realis from Latin race.
Yeah.
So it does come from that, but something with real actual purchasing power or actual value in money. But I wonder why real property. Well, real property doesn't just mean real estate, right? It means any tangible property that could be converted to money.
And that may
money.
It may be, you know, because when we say someone's estate, we're talking about something else. But real estate is this plot of land.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But I don't know the answer. Maybe that's something that listeners, somebody out there, will be able to supply us with.
Yeah. I was a philosophy major myself in college, by the way. But I don't recall studying the idea of the real.
A listener writes, John, in fact, I have seen a shift in the use of the past tense of the verb to plead in the newspapers from pled to pleaded.
Mm-hmm.
Which one is correct?
People ask me this a lot, actually, and they're both correct, but pled is usually just used as a legal term for entering a plea, whereas pleaded generally is in the general use, you know, for she pleaded for a new car. You would
but
say
he pled the case.
For a new, he, yeah.
You would say he pled for a new car. He pleaded for a new car.
Yes, yes.
Pled the case.
Pled guilty, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Another. This listener, Sarah, says, my Yiddish grandma always also says make a party as well as towel paper instead of paper towel.
Oh,
and I suspect those are, again,
mm-hmm.
translations.
Mm-hmm.
This other listener says making a party usually refers more to an affair, a catered party.
Oh. Hmm.
So we're making a party, meaning.
See, I never get
why invited not just say
to
catering?
These things. I guess I don't get around much.
This listener, Fred, says, I was taught in my cultural geography course 35 years ago as an undergraduate that the use of the word neck in place names was a sign of Dutch colonial influence.
Hmm.
Some older timers, when I was coming up, would refer to the iron-bound section of Newark as down neck.
Hmm.
Isn't that interesting?
Like throat.
Yes.
Down neck and up neck.
Let's take a call from AB from Manhattan. Hi.
Hi. Hello.
Yes, what's your question or answer?
Well, we were talking recently, and we came across the fact that object and object
mm-hmm.
were the same word, and we thought
right.
that was curious.
Yeah. One is a noun and one's a verb. There are a lot of, there's a class of words like that. There's record and record.
But those are similar in their activity in some way, you know, I mean.
Oh, I see. I mean, as in to object,
but,
as.
Yeah, yeah. Object and object don't seem to have any relationship. One is, you know.
Right. Let me just check. I haven't actually given that any thought before. To object in the sense of, let's see.
I think they just come from different roots, don't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, there's the Latin objectare from obicere, to throw. And then the other, no, they come from the same, they come from the same root.
An object.
Something perceptible, an object, and something, and to be averse to something. They both come from the Latin obicere, to put before or hinder, and ob, from obiacere, to throw.
So it is a truly crazy English language.
It is. It is. But it's fascinating, isn't it?
A listener suggests that the Ola comes from Victrola, which was obviously an early record player.
Mm-hmm.
And then payola would come off of that because of the record business.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know about those other Olas like Mazola oil and things like that. But it is interesting that there Ola, you don't see it anywhere else. It's not like E-T-T-E any of the other normal endings to words that we get from other languages.
An invented suffix. Yeah, it's interesting. I wonder if mullah is in the same class. Probably not.
I don't know. Well, you know, I think that we're probably sending people scurrying to reference books like mad this hour. I think we have time for just one more. Herb from Westchester.
Yes, I'm calling about term back-to-back, meaning consecutive, which I think comes from game of stud poker, in which the first card is dealt face down and the next card is dealt face up. And if they're the same, like the first card is an ace and the second card is an ace, you say you have aces back-to-back, and that means that you have consecutive aces. But now people, mostly sports writers, are saying back-to-back-to-back to describe all three home runs in succession or winning the World Series three times in a row. They say back-to-back-to-back, and that doesn't make any sense at all.
No, it doesn't.
But just playing with words in the same way that they talk about a three-peat when a team wins a championship 3 years in a row.
Yeah.
Well, you know, that's why people get paid big money to come up with these brilliant ideas. Another listener suggests that the Ola comes from pianola.
Pianola. Now, is that before Victrola? It
probably was. That's a player piano, and they go back a long time. We're going to keep on going back in history with these Olas. but right now, a reminder that Pat Tola will be back with us in December, Ola. When are you going to be back? On the 19th of December.
Good.
And if you haven't gotten enough of your Pat fix, you can always go to gramophobia.com. Or write to her at mailbox@gramophobia.com or read any of the books that you can find in any serious bookstore. Thank you so much, Pat.
Thank you.
Our Thanksgiving show promises to be a blast. I'll talk with astronaut Eileen Collins, the first woman to command the space shuttle. Also, a look at the life of Wernher von Braun, who built rockets for both Nazi Germany and the United States. He was obsessed with being the Christopher Columbus of outer space. Then Alice Siebold on her new best-selling novel, plus Laurie David on how kids can help in the fight against global warming. The Leonard Lopate Show is produced by Sarah English, Blakeney Schick, and Scott Goldberg. Melissa Egan is the executive producer, and we had help today from Samantha Morgan Stern and Stephen Valentino. Jay Cout was at the audio controls. I'm Leonard Lopate, your host. We'll see you tomorrow.